Dr. Metzig, how are you this afternoon, sir? American military personnel
way,
or something.
I went last night and watched, is it
13 hours? Oh, did you see that?
Oh, yes. My gosh.
Oh, man, what did you think?
You know, it just gives you a lot of respect for these guys.
Yeah, it does.
You know, I mean, just...
I have not seen the movie yet. I've read segments, I've read portions of the book online, and I know the story fairly well from reports from, because this was all gathered from the ones that survived.
Yeah.
That were not allowed to talk to the media until just last year. And
it's amazing.
There's
story.
An awful lot of details in there.
The thing that kind of amazed me, I went at 7 last night, 7 something. Anyhow, there were only probably about 8 people in the show.
In the theater?
I just said, oh my gosh, what's good? There's something wrong here. You know,
is a movie everybody should see, like American Sniper was.
Yeah. It just gives you a picture of what really happened, what was going on there. And, you know, at least for me, you come out with just tremendous respect for these guys.
Yeah, incredible.
You know? And it sort of gives you a picture of how the government, I would say, doesn't operate.
It's true. It's true.
or how can, you know, how bureaucracy can.
The rules of engagement. Well, you know, I can't even say rules of engagement because, you know, if we can really only speculate as to why this happened and why the White House turned their back on these men. But all indications seems to be that Chris Stevens was involved. Obama and Clinton were involved in running guns into Turkey for the Syrian rebels. And that this was in response to that. And rather than just before the election, let the truth come out about what the White House and the State Department was doing, they decided to just let these guys go and blame it on a freaking video.
Which was nonsense.
Yeah. Anyway, so we didn't get a chance to talk much before I went on. We started this top of the hour. Dr. Mensah came in the middle of the last segment, but I had to jump up and had to go to visit the men's room. Had an urge.
La toilette.
And appropriately, we're going to talk about something that I've been wanting to talk to you about for a while because I think I may suffer from it.
Well, you know, Jazz, it's interesting. 16%, some studies up to 16%. I mean, think of that. That's 1 in every 5.5 people that you see have irritable bowel syndrome problems. I mean, that's amazing, all right? And what we're going to do, we're going to talk about sort of the new things about irritable bowel syndrome. Number two, what is it and how you go about it? More than that, at the very end, I have 11 recommendations. Mm. You know, that, you know, imagine if you can listen to these 11 recommendations and look at, in fact, I'd recommend people get a pen and write, you know, and a piece of paper and write it down towards the end of what these 11 recommendations are. It sort of covers irritable bowel syndrome, where to go. It's not easy to treat, and it's got an interesting history. In the 1950s, it was called spastic colitis.
Okay.
And everybody thought you were crazy in your head or it was an emotional problem.
Really?
Yes. In the 1960s, it was changed to spastic colon. And then 1970s is when it was called irritable bowel. All right. In the 1980s, it went to irritable bowel syndrome. And then in the 1990s, we changed it, and it was called functional bowel disease. We got rid of irritable bowel syndrome.
Oh, dear. That don't sound good, Doc.
No, and then in the early 2000s, it went back to irritable bowel syndrome.
What changed?
With constipation and without constipation or mixed or with diarrhea. And essentially,
it's weird how the combination works.
Essentially, before we lumped it all together. We didn't really understand the pathophysiology of what was happening. And there's some new things out, just really new. In fact, we'll go over those in just a minute, of what's happening, all right? Because when I went to medical school, everybody kind of thought there was an emotional problem. And there is an emotional component. Don't get me wrong. There is. But that's not the whole answer. And probably the most interesting thing is that we know that an acute gastroenteritis, like a viral flu syndrome or even bacterial infections of the gut, can start irritable bowel syndrome, all right? And then ever after that, you have IBS. And that's where they started looking at infectious etiologies to this, all right? Well, what they have found is there's something called a cytolethal distending toxin. It's called CDTB. But make a long story short, this toxin that comes from this gastroenteritis, from whatever reason, all right, viral, bacterial, whatever, this toxin, this distending toxin, literally causes autoimmunity to something in our nerves in our gut, called vinculin, but it's essentially, so these are nerve fibers in the gut that this toxin affects these vinculin fibers or these vinculin, I was going to say fibers, they're not really fibers, but these receptor sites mm-hmm. on these nerves. And literally it's what causes it. And that's what causes the gut motility problems, bacterial overgrowth, and we have irritable bowel syndrome. So the most interesting thing that's come out of this is that we bottom line now understand that part of the pathophysiology of how this occurs is there may be bacterial overgrowth. The bacterial overgrowth from a poor gut flora, that's a big word for saying, you know, what the background, what your the bugs are, good and bad, in your gut are like.
Okay.
If those get out of whack, then you can cause toxins to some of these bugs that literally cause irritable bowel syndrome.
So how do you treat it?
Well, let's
you before, said it's difficult to yeah, treat.
Well,
how do you treat
well, let's,
it?
Well, let's before we do that, I want you to think. We are now, this is just coming out, and it's not available everywhere, all right? But we are now able to do a test, essentially checking for this antibody that you can do a blood test for, all right? And the good thing about that is now we're able to diagnose for sure, is it irritable bowel versus something else?
Okay. Like, what else could it be?
Well, there's a lot of GI motility issues. There's a problem with inflammatory bowel disease. That's a big word for saying bowel disease that causes inflammation in the lining of the gut, which can turn to cancer, a whole bunch of bad things. Celiac disease can present like irritable bowel syndrome. Celiac sprue, mild gluten intolerance can present like it. Lactose intolerance can present a lot like it. So it's a simple way of sort of, probably in the next 5 years, this will be available everywhere. But it'll be a simple test to say, you got it or you don't. Where do we go from there?
Well, what if you don't have it? Then you have those other possibilities.
Yes, exactly. What it will mean in the long run, it will save a lot of money. Okay. And here's why, Jazz. Today, the part of the differential are blockages in the colon. Mm-hmm. All right, and irritable bowel that's one of the things the differential has to be ruled out. So most of these people end up getting a colonoscopy. Now, if they're after 50, they need it anyhow. But before 50, many of these people don't really need colonoscopies except to rule out some blockage or problems in the colon. If you would have this positive test, knowing that it's a bacterial overgrowth and you have this vinculin antibody forming that's causing it, you no longer need to do that colonoscopy. You need to have antibiotics and all the other things that need to be done, which we'll go through in a minute. So in the long run, I think it will end up saving investigation and cost.
Okay, I got you. So saving the testing is going to save some money. Sure. We're back with Dr. Mensing, and we're talking IBS, irritable bowel syndrome. And I think it's something a lot of people don't fully understand.
Well, you know, doctors haven't always understood. In fact, doctors have not understood.
Research
this
scientists stuff. Haven't fully understood it either.
Just, you know, with the stuff with the pathophysiology we went through with about these antibodies, this is just the start of really understanding this disease.
What are the symptoms of IBS?
Well, there's several. I was just thinking 60% of the people out there listening probably have these symptoms.
I was going to say, I can probably tell you what they are. But
first is crampy abdominal pain. Right. All right. Number two, a bloated feeling.
Yep.
Number three, gas.
Oh, boy.
Number four, diarrhea or constipation
or both.
Yep. All right. And mucus in your stool. Now, mucus in your stool. Now, here's a few things that we you need to know. And there are three symptoms that if you have, you should not be treating yourself. You need to go to a doctor right away. All right? They're sort of the three red lights with these kind of symptoms. Number one is if you have rectal bleeding. Any rectal bleeding, you got to see your doctor. End of discussion. It's this week kind of thing.
Just a hemorrhoid or something.
No. Well, even if you have hemorrhoids, you have to be seen. Because here's the problem. You may have hemorrhoids causing rectal bleeding, but I have to prove that you don't have rectal bleeding higher up.
Okay.
That the hemorrhoids cover. And we'll get into this a little bit, but a lot of people with irritable bowel, one of the complications is hemorrhoids. You know, and the patient can come in, complain. In fact, I had a guy the other day that came in last Tuesday that came in and his complaint was hemorrhoids. His problem is not really hemorrhoids. He has irritable bowel causing the hemorrhoids. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, and the hemorrhoids are not the root issue. And it's not no good. I was going to say no good. That's not quite right.
It's a symptom of
But that's a symptom of a bigger issue.
Bigger issue. Right, gotcha.
But there's three things. The rectal bleeding. Number two, unexplained weight loss. If you're not trying to lose weight and you're losing weight, all right? Yeah, and it happens. I had a guy that came in 2 weeks ago, a gentleman, that his wife brought him in, and he lost something like, in 6 months, 25 pounds. And he's not trying to lose weight. There's something else wrong. And you need to see your doctor right away for that. It's a different story if you're trying to lose weight and you lose it. That's a totally different story, but unexplained weight loss. And the last thing is if you have bowel pain at night that wakes you up, then you need to see your doctor. All right? Because okay, typically irritable bowel doesn't bother you at night.
At night.
It can, but typically not. So if you have pain at night.
So that's something else.
You need to see your doctor. All
so
right.
That's something else.
Yeah, those are the three things that you need
it
to look
at. It usually kicks into me, the cramping usually kicks in about within the first 30 minutes of getting up.
Or of eating, by the way. Some people get it after eating.
I think
eating
I've
something.
Really noticed that off and on. But it's pretty much like clockwork within the first half an hour. And I think it's because I've gone from being horizontal where everything's just kind of laying out there to going vertical and everything kind of drops down. Yeah. Okay. But the gas, I can relate to that because it's this gas pain. Is it a good idea to take a gas tablet? I mean, I
or
take
gas
some,
X or something like that.
Yeah. Yes or no?
So.
Is it going to hurt anything?
No, probably not. Probably not. If you're used appropriately, my big concern with that is you're treating the symptoms, not the root issue.
Right.
You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah,
that's really the issue. You need to treat the root issue, and then if you have a little problem with gas, fine, use something. All right. Many of the antacids with simethicone will help that also.
Mm-hmm.
The simethicone component will help the gas part. But what you don't want is you don't want people out there self treating and not looking at the root issues. They should somewhere along the line be assessed by their doctor and treat the root issues. All right, that's kind of important.
Yeah.
Now, there's a lot of triggers, what we call, doctors call triggers, that can trigger the symptoms. All right, a lot of foods and chocolate, spicy food can do it. Certain types of fruits, beans, milk will often do it. And in fact, chocolate milk, if you drink chocolate milk and have a lot of trouble with irritable bowel, very often, within days, you'll be constipated.
Wow.
Do you follow? In fact, you can take...
Well, what about the beans? Go back to that for a minute because, I was told that I should be eating... When I had the diverticulitis, you and another doctor and another, actually three, all told me you need more fiber, you need more fiber, you need more fiber. So beans not a good source of fiber if you've got IBS?
It is a good source of fiber. But there some patients with the beans... Like, for instance, if you have to take Beano for the gas all the time, if you get abdominal cramping and a lot of gas when you take beans, it may be, not always, it may be just your normal kind of thing, but it may be that that's a sign of irritable bowel, all right? But not always. Carbonated drinks, surprisingly, some people get trouble with and can't, their irritable bowel flares up with it. And so one of the
things... But doesn't that go the other way? Doesn't that go through the kidneys and the bladder?
Yes, but the something about the carbonation... In some people, one of the things we do if you have a lot of questionable irritable bowel or if you have irritable bowel, we will ask you to stop drinking all carbonated beverages and see if it helps because that may be the trigger. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Sure.
That you're drinking too many sodas and that,
was
and that will stop the problem.
What about tea? What about iced tea, for instance?
No, not problems.
Okay.
No.
Because I did notice a while, years ago that I felt like I was getting more after I drank a big, iced tea, just regular old iced tea. That I would feel kind of crampy and a little pain in the gut.
Not that I know of for irritable bowel.
Okay.
The other thing you have to remember...
Coffee probably doesn't help.
Coffee is not really associated with it. But here's the thing. There's always this every caveat, Jazz. Every patient is different. If I have a patient that comes in and says, every time I drink tea, I get irritable bowel symptoms, it probably works for them. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Sure.
And darn it, you better not, better stay away from that kind of thing. But we're talking about in general kind of thing, A cabbage is another one that causes a lot of people get in trouble with. And the last one is very common, especially in this county. I mean, this is the second, Bakersfield has the second high per capita number of alcoholics in the nation. We've talked about that. But there's a high alcohol consumption here in Bakersfield. But alcohol can be a trigger for irritable bowel problems, all right? And so those that have irritable bowel, one of the things we do is have them stop for 3 months. To see is it going to work or not. And a lot of people don't understand that. Alcohol also causes a lot of problem with impotence. In fact, I saw a guy this morning, and he drinks a couple of drinks every day, and on the weekend, up to 6 or 12 pack a day. Too much, all right? And he can't figure out. He's a young guy, and he can't figure out why he has impotence. the first thing you need to do is stop the alcohol. And alcohol can do the same thing. It can be a trigger for irritable bowel. Let's go over the risk factors, Jazz, because there's a bunch of risk factors that are kind of neat to look at. But number one is if you're under age 45, all right, it seldom starts after age 50. All right, you've had it for years before. If you, if you're 50 and you've got irritable bowel, you had it when you were 45, 30 probably.
Just didn't know it.
But or it may not have been diagnosed. But it rarely starts de novo, new, as a new diagnosis at age 60, all right? If you're 60 years old and you've never had irritable bowel symptoms before and you've not come up with irritable bowel syndromes, it becomes incumbent on the physician to work that patient up, say, what else is going on? All right? Because it may be irritable bowel, but the chances is much less.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
Females have twice the incidence of men. All right? So if you're a male with irritable bowel, there's much less chance. Most of the there's two times more females that have irritable bowel than males. All right? Family history of irritable bowel is important, okay, as a risk factor. We don't really know why, all right? We don't know the reason why. Hormones, and here's another area. I'm very big into hormones, especially bioidentical hormones, but here's the thing we don't really understand yet. But it is very common that women during menses will have a flare-up of their irritable bowel. Now, we don't know exactly why yet, okay? This is still investigational, but it is well recognized that happens. Another thing that's a trigger, and this is why for years a lot of doctors thought it was all sort of all in your head, is that stress can aggravate it and make it worse or bring it on.
It seems to be the deciding factor in so many different ailments is stress. You got stress. I don't feel like I have stress, though.
Jazz. It's not the person that has that you think is stressed, and that, he comes in, curses and swears, and kicks a hole in the wall.
Yeah.
And you say, oh, he's stressed. That guy will never get irritable bowel, all right? Because he's letting that stress out. Or it may be inappropriately, but that it's a person who is, never swears, keeps it all inside, and is all buttoned up and, oh, I'm nice and fresh.
I can't say I fit that description. Hit the beanbag or the punching bag.
Suppresses it, and those suppressed stressors are probably more important than what we call stressors, all right?
Okay.
Now, it's a response to the stress. And I saw a guy this morning that was, he's got a business in town, and these are tough times, all right? I mean, there's tough times. And whether we like it or not, stress makes a difference, Jazz. It does, and it can be one of the triggers for irritable bowel. And if you, one of the 11 things that has been shown to help irritable bowel is stress reduction counseling, hypnosis, and also yoga, all right? And we don't know why, but it definitely makes a difference. Definitely makes a difference.
Not a chance. We'll tell you, the hypnosis thing is cool. I'm down for that. I'm not going to do the yoga thing.
I'm not sure I'm a fan of hypnosis, but
I'm not doing the yoga thing. Let's get on with the IBS now that we've gotten everybody all stressed out. We can talk about the IBS.
Let's go over a few things, all right? One of the things we didn't mention on risk factors, the last thing I want to talk about on that, is mental health problems are shown to be risk factors. Anxiety, depression, personality disorders. Female with domestic abuse at home, increased risk, and childhood kids with sexual abuse in their past.
Wow.
The risk goes way, way up for irritable bowel. It's interesting. We mentioned several things that you need to watch for it that are red flags to doctors, all right, that need further workup. We mentioned hemorrhoids, okay? If you have hemorrhoids, especially with the constipation or the mixed type irritable bowel, you have to look and see, is this just hemorrhoids or why are the hemorrhoids there? Mm-hmm. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Sure.
We talked about that. We have some patients, this is quite rare nowadays, but we have some patients who have done what we call food avoidance, but they know that this food causes troubles, this food causes this, and pretty soon they're down to the eating crackers
exactly.
and sodas or something like that, and they get malnourished. And the last thing is part of the workup for depression, and I was going to say more than depression, but people who are discouraged, all right, have sort of given up and ready to check out. And they're depressed, but discouragement with depression has been shown to have a high correlation with irritable bowel.
Discouraged and depression, such as the loss of a family member or friend?
Yeah, well, more than that, with no hope of getting anywhere. You know, one of the things we do in depression screening, maybe we should talk about this someday, but is one of the things I look for when I'm talking to you is not that you're depressed, but how hopeful are you that things will get better?
Will get better.
If you're hopeless, wow, these are people are high risk for a lot of bad things happening, but that hopelessness part of depression is very much associated, one of the risk factors for irritable bowel.
Wow.
All right, that's interesting. Now, what are the things that we should, let's go over the foods that are good, all right?
Okay, we're running out of time, so we probably should move this along.
Why don't we do this? Let's go over the recommendations then.
Yeah, let's do the recommendations.
Number one is probiotics, all right?
Take them every day.
And we recommend if you have your...
How many times a day? Twice? Once?
I would take three capsules every meal for 6 weeks minimum.
Oh, wow.
Number two, you need to have a culture and sensitivity and an ovine parasite of your stool. Your doctor will do that. Number three, you can use antidiarrheals like Imodium and Lomotil as needed, as long as you've been worked up correctly for the diagnosis.
Okay.
As long as the diagnosis is sure, and there's other things I've been...
I was going to ask you about that, because wouldn't that also cause constipation? But if you have the constipation and you've got the diarrhea,
exactly.
It's going to...
Okay, bile acid binding agents like cholestyramine, a lot of doctors use. It's a fairly old treatment, very cheap. There's two new medicines, Zyfan for diarrhea patients and Lotronex. For people with diarrhea, there's a bit of a problem with it. There's slightly increased problems with ischemic bowel in older people. Osmotic diuretics, that's things like Miralax. And you buy it over the counter. Actually, it's propylene glycol. But milk and magnesia, things like that.
Okay.
Recommend trying a lactose-free diet for about 6 weeks to 3 months to see if that makes
milk.
Yes, because it will change possibly... you may have lactose intolerance with irritable bowel or only that, and it helps to sort that out. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you'd stop.
Is that something you develop at some point?
Yes, you can have it. Many people develop lactose intolerance in their 30s or 40s.
I thought it was something that was with you all your life.
No.
I'll be darned.
All right. Let's go over. So we try a lactose-free diet, stress reduction, things like counseling, peppermint oil.
No, wait, what?
Peppermint oil, evening primrose oil, and fish oil. Three things you buy over the counter, they're cheap, have been shown to help, all right? Now, these are more of a, I was going to say shown, they haven't been proven, that's maybe a better way to say it, but there is a lot of evidence that they help, all right? But there's been no studies to say that. And the last thing is acupuncture. Amazingly enough, in fact, we have a person who's very good at acupuncture that we refer sometimes patients to in specialized
cases. Is that covered by insurance?
No, most not. But phenomenal. I mean, if you come to me and say, we have a phenomenal doctor who does very good acupuncture, and amazing things can happen. Amazing. Irritable bowel. Treat it with acupuncture. All right.
You're willing to try anything, really.
So to me, that's quite amazing. And those are the 11 things that we would, in our mind, go through.
I've been going through this, I'll be honest with you. I've been going through this for years, and it's an off and on thing. Sometimes, it's off and on. And just when I'm thinking, okay, that's it, I gotta go get some tests done, then it goes away.
That's very classic.
And it's gone.
And either stress change or you stop the triggers.
There's a commercial where it shows this woman, and she's walking through, I think she's at a carnival or a fair, or something like that, and she's walking along, and she's eyeballing every bathroom as she walks through this event. Well, and that's what I find myself doing, no matter where I'm at.
Well, Jazz, there's five foods. The last thing we'll mention, there's five foods that help irritable bowel.
Okay, run through those.
Rhubarb.
Rhubarb?
Rhubarb.
I haven't
barley,
had rhubarb since I was a kid.
Tangerine peels, licorice, and ginger.
Tangerine peels?
Peels. Of tangerines.
Eating the peel?
Yes.
Peeling?
Yes.
You mean really?
Now you make sure you scrub them beforehand, get all the toxic pesticides off of you.
Well, yeah,
but interestingly, tangerine peels.
You eat it? What do? You put it in a blender?
I probably blend it up and make a smoothie out of it.
I
don't know.
I can't just see they're sitting there eating the peeling off of
the tangerine. So there's definitely, even foods can help ameliorate the symptoms. All right?
You might not need drugs if you can do it the natural way
My experience, I'm not sure foods are the total answer. I look at it as cheap and safe and very little downside and do it. Why not do it kind of thing? But I'm not sure that in most cases it's the answer. It's all part of the answer. All right?
Okay. So there you have it, folks. And the other, what is, what there is something I was going to ask you. What is something similar to this? Is it colitis?
You can get actually colitises or inflammatory bowel
now,
disease.
What is that?
That's where the irritable bowel means that the bowel is normal. Now, there are some gap junction issues, which is there's another side issue that may are susceptible to it. But irritable bowel, think of it, the bowel is normal, but the motility is screwed up because of these toxins that are causing antibodies to the vermiculite.
Now, colitis, though, is?
Colitis, the bowel itself, either the small bowel or the large bowel, is screwed up. And there's a problem with the bowel itself, and the bowel wall.
That requires surgery.
Well, depends what it is and what it's from, all right? But if you have, let's say, ulcerative colitis or Crohn's at times. Crohn's is another
Crohn's disease. Crohn's disease, that's
but those yeah. two, those have more chance of surgery. In fact, there's a definite – in fact, if you have ulcerative colitis for more than 7 to 10 years, you need to prophylactically take out your colon or else you're going to get cancer. It's over kind of thing.
Man.
All right?
Oh,
but that's a totally different illness, Jazz, because – in that ulcerative colitis, the bowel wall is screwed up. This is not the irritable bowel syndrome. The bowel wall is essentially normal. It's not a bowel wall problem. It's a nerve problem.
What would you do to test for that, for colitis or for Crohn's?
Well, remember those several things we said. Number one, pain at night, blood in your stool, or losing weight. All right, those are the things that you have to remember.
Well, I've been losing weight, but that's because...
Well, you're trying to lose weight. That's a different story.
No, I'm just taking metformin, which causes a slight weight loss over a period
of
time.
You're telling too much about your health history here.
Well, I don't know. You know, I'm just a straightforward guy here on the radio. You know, I just talk like I do when I'm sitting in the bar room, you know, with my pals and my buddies, you know. Yeah, I got to go poop.
But no, it's interesting. It's 16%. Jazz, that's 1 in 5 people out there who are listening to us today probably have
this.
And if you think of it that way, probably most people listening today either have it or know someone who does.
Dr. Jan Mensing from The Practice, ladies and gentlemen. Doc, we'll see you next Monday.
Is next Monday or Monday after?
It's the next Monday. Next Monday.
Oh, is it next Monday? Okay, we'll be here.
Coming in. And don't forget, if you missed the earlier portions of anything that Doctor and I talk about,
go to the website, drmensink.com.
And also knzr.com. We've got them there on what they call it, a pod webcam cast or something like that.
It's a link.
It's a link to
his
podcast. Okay, gotcha.
That's how it works. Okay.
So,
it takes us usually about 2 weeks to get the programs on. All right. But they're all there.
It's always good to, you know, go back and...
Yeah, there's a lot of information. If you go to drmensink.com or the practice website, there's just a phenomenal... Every week we're putting 3 or 4 different videos about different health problems for our patients. The web, that part of the web is, we look at it not as, you know, a lot of webs are for selling. This is not really for selling, but to help our patients.
That's right. That's
really neat. A lot of good information.
Very cool. All right, Doc, we'll see you next Monday then.
Sounds good.